All right. All right, I got 27 after. Let me just answer one real quick, all right? Go quickly to 2 Samuel. Let's see, where was that, Bill? 5? Yes, 2 Samuel 5. All right, I'm going to answer this one real quick, all right? Bill gave me this one last week, and then I read it, and I thought, oh, okay, that's not hard. All right, look, please, if you will, at verse 3. It says, "And so all the elders of Israel came to the king, to David, to Hebron. And King David made a league with them in Hebron before the Lord. And they anointed David king over Israel." All right, so David was already the king of Judah. And now the elders of Israel, the 10 tribes, other tribes came and they anointed David to be king over all of them. So now the kingdom is united. Verse 4 tells us David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem, he reigned 30 and 3 years over all Israel and Judah. All right, so notice that when he first took the throne, he ruled and reigned from Hebron. Hebron is in Judah. All right, and then he went to Jerusalem. All right, look at verse 6. "And the king and his men went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites." All right, now Jerus means city, and Salem means peace. All right, the city of peace, that's Jerusalem. Isn't it strange that there has never been peace in the city of peace? But there will be one day. All right, so the king and his men went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites. All right, so who lived there? The Jebusites lived there, the inhabitants of the land. The Jebusites were Canaanites. They were not Jews. They were the ones that occupied and lived in what became the city of Jerusalem. All right. So the king and his men went to Jerusalem, which spake unto David, saying, "Except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in hither," thinking David cannot come in hither. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion. The same is the city of David. Now, what the men of Jebus did, what they did basically when David and his men showed up, was they put out a challenge to David. And they basically, now the Zion was a walled city, and so you couldn't just come and get in. When they saw David coming, remember, you always are going up to Jerusalem, always. And so they had fortifications. The Jebusites were fortified, had a fortified city. And so when they saw David coming and his men, they closed the gates and then they couldn't get in. And so they start shouting over the battlements, and they basically are telling him that the lame and the blind could defeat you. The lame and the blind in this city could defeat you. All right, go away. We could defeat you. It'd be like saying, "We got a bunch of kids in here could whoop you." All right, we got a bunch of blind folks in here that can whoop you. And so, nevertheless, verse 7 says that David took the stronghold of Zion, the same as the city of David. Now, when we went to Jerusalem this last trip, We went down and walked through the old city of Jerusalem, walked through those caves, all right, those caves down there, if you remember that. I remember that, Steve, zigzag all through all that. Well, that's where all this happened. All right, so look at verse 8. And David said on that day, what day? On the day that they conquered the city, whosoever getteth up to the gutter. All right, now the gutter was the water system. You remember the water system that we saw, Steve? Remember that? And so David takes his men, and he says, now they got a wall up here, but listen, they got to have water. So find the water system. Find where there's water, and that's how we're going to get into the city. And they found a water supply, and they went in through the water supply. They went in the gutter. Okay, they went in the gutter where the water was coming out of the city. And that's how they got in. And the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be the chief and captain. So what David was saying to his men is, find a water supply and we'll go in and we'll show them. We'll go in and get the lame and the blind. He's not talking about lame people and blind people. He's talking about the people of the city who they said, when they shouted over, our people, the lame and the blind can defeat you. David says, go in there and get the lame and the blind. Go get them. Go get them. Take this city. And so, wherefore they say, they said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. So the idea was that this is just a play on words. And the Jebusites said, we could beat you. We got a bunch of lame people in here. We got a bunch of blind people in here, and we could whoop you. Well, we could take you. And so David said, well, let's go in there and we'll show the lame and the blind that we're not to be messed with. And that's what they did. Does that make sense?
Okay. So David didn't really hate.
No. But they were Canaanites, and they were told they. Zion was going to be David's city. It was going to be the city of David. So you got to get rid of the Jebusites, the Canaanites. Get them out of the land. Clear them out. And the problem with Israel is they never did get rid of them. That was the problem. They never got rid of that cancer. And that cancer ended up being their destruction. All right, so it's not, no. These are not literally blind and deaf people. Blind and lame people. We're not talking about literal blind people or literal lame people. It was sarcasm on the part of the Jebusites and saying, we could whoop you with lame and blind people. David says, oh yeah, guys, go get the lame and the blind people. Does that make sense? That's what he's saying. All right. Well, a little longer than I wanted, but it normally is. All right, Genesis 23. All right, go back to Genesis 23. The question was, what is the deal with cremation? All right, Genesis 23, are you there? All right, now look at verse 1. It says, and Sarah was 107 and 20 years old, bless her heart. 127 years old. Wow, bless her heart. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah, what's the next word? Died. Now, where'd she die? She died in Kirjath Arba. The same is what? Hebron. That's exactly where we were just a minute ago with David. All right, that's where he ruled from. So she was in Hebron in Kirjath Arba when she died. All right, now go down to verse 19. All right, let's go 18. All right, let's go 17. It says, in the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave which was therein, and all the trees that were in the field, that were in all the borders round about, were made sure unto Abraham for a possession in the presence of the children of Heth. Again, more Canaanites. Before all that went in at the gate of this city. And after this, Abraham, what's the next word?
Buried.
All right, so look at verse 2. And Sarah died. And in verse 19, Abraham buried. Now, consistently throughout the Bible. All right, everybody look at me now. Look here. Here's a principle. All right? Here's a principle. Every time from henceforth and throughout the rest of the Bible, and he died and he was buried. And he died and he was buried. Not one time, not once does it say, and he died and he was cremated. It's always, and he died and he was buried. All right? Now, look at me. So far as biblical evidence is concerned, that is all the evidence for burying over cremation. That's all the evidence right there. That's it. Take your Bible and go to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy 7. All right, now God is giving the law, and he is talking about the things of the law and about idolatry and so on and so forth. And let's see, in verse 25, it says, the graven images of there is just anybody else besides the Jews, anybody else. The graven images of their gods, small g, okay? So here they were coming, they're going to come into the land of Canaan. You know why it was called the land of Canaan? Because it was full of Canaanites, people that lived in Canaan. And the land was full of them, tribe after tribe after tribe. And God told them that was the land that he had promised to Abraham. And he told them, go in and rid the land of the Canaanites. Get rid of them. Slay utterly. Remember that? God was indignant about that. I mean, there was no messing around. Don't go in there and mess around with the Canaanites. You go in and you tell them to leave. If they don't leave, you kill them. You say, well, that's awful brutal. Yes, but God knew that if they were not destroyed, they would assimilate with the Jews, and the Jews would become like them. And when you get to the end of the Old Testament, that is one of Hosea, the prophet Hosea's biggest issues as to why God was about to judge the Jews and send them into captivity, was because Israel had become Canaan. The Jews had become the Canaanites. And so he says in verse 25, the graven images of their gods shall ye burn with fire. Thou shalt not destroy the silver or the gold that is on them, nor take it unto thee, lest thou be snared therein, for it is an abomination to the Lord thy God. But notice that burning with fire had the idea of a curse behind it. Burning with fire has the idea of a curse. Now, what was to be burnt here? The graven images. Not the people, but the graven images. But then hold on now. Go over to the book of Joshua for just a minute. And chapter 7. Joshua chapter 7. Look at verse 15. Joshua chapter 7 and verse 15. It says, "And it shall be that he that is taken with the accursed thing shall be burnt with fire, he and all that he hath, because he hath transgressed the covenant of the Lord, and because he hath wrought folly in Israel." So Joshua rose up early in the morning and brought Israel by their tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. And he brought the family of Judah, and he took the family of the Zarhites, and he brought the family of the Zarhites man by man, and Zabdi was taken. And he brought his household man by man, and Achan, remember him? All right, so this is at the end of the story of Achan. And do you remember what Achan did? All right, you remember they came to the city of Jericho. Remember that? And God told them, now, when you go in to Jericho, don't take anything. Don't take anything. And everybody obeyed except for Achan. And Achan took the gods, the seraphim, and the gods of the men of Jericho, and nobody saw him do it, except for God saw him. And so they left Jericho, went to Ai, little tiny place, and were soundly defeated, and they came crying back to God and said, "Why did we lose against little Ai? What's going on?" And God said, "Because somebody in your camp took the accursed object, took the gods of the Canaanites and hid them in his tent." And so they went through the process and God identified Achan. And now notice here what happened in verse 18. He brought his, what's the next word? Household, all of them. All of them. You think God's messing around here? He brought his household, man by man, and Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, was taken. And Joshua said unto Achan, "My son, give, I pray thee, glory to the Lord God of Israel, and make confession unto him, and tell me now what thou hast done. Hide it not from me." And verse 21, he took the Babylonian garment, he took the shekels of silver, he took the wedge of gold and the silver, he took them and hid them in his tent. And so they got it out, verse 23, and Joshua and all, verse 24, the sons of Zerah and his daughters, his oxen, his asses, his sheep, his tent, all that he had, brought them down to the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, "Why hast thou troubled us? The Lord shall trouble thee this day." And all Israel stoned him, and what? Wow. Wow. Now look at me, folks. Outside of this, that's the only example of a body or bodies being burned. And notice it's connected with the same thing that was stated in the book of Deuteronomy, judgment. And he died and he was buried. And he died and he was buried. In the scriptures, we read that God's method of disposing of a dead body is that of burial in the ground. All through the scriptures. And he died. And he was buried. It never says, and he died and he was cremated. Except for right here. And that was when judgment was being applied. When you search the Bible for references to cremation, you only find these two incidences that where burning is mentioned. And burning is first mentioned in relation to a curse of God and not with an honorable burial. It is connected in Deuteronomy with a curse from God, not an honorable burial. And then it is mentioned in Joshua with Achan. And again, under a curse, not an honorable burial. All right. Now go over to the book of Amos. There's one more verse. Amos, one more verse, chapter 2. All right, chapter 2, verse 1. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Moab, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof. Or in other words, I will not withhold my wrath and my punishment upon Moab. Why? Well, because he, Moab, hath burned the bones of the king of Edom into lime. All right, now, I was asked, when a body is cremated, what is left? And what is left are the bones that basically become lime. All right, now, if you've ever been where ashes are scattered, as they say, you know that there are big pieces. Those are the joints. Those are the knuckles, that type of thing. And there are big pieces of the ash, of the lime that is left, the calcium that is left. All right? But what is left are basically the bones. Everything else burns up. And then they gather, because it does not burn completely up. It never does. All right? And so they gather what is left, and they put it in a bag, and they put that bag in a box. And sometimes if you purchase the urn, they will put the bag in an urn, and they will give it to you. And you can put it on the mantle or do whatever you want to do with it. All right? But notice, again, that in this case, cremation is, again, notice, I'm not putting words here. I'm just trying to get you to see it. But cremation, again, is identified with a divine curse from God. From the beginning of the Bible to the end of the Bible, death is followed by burial. All right, so question then, why is what is the general history of cremation? Well, ironically, it goes back thousands of years. And it goes back to the Celtic people of Europe. It goes back to the Aryan people of Europe. It goes back through time with the American Indians and the Hindu culture of the country of India. And the Vikings and the Amerindian people of South America and many other cultures for centuries, for millennia, have practiced cremation. It was the Roman Emperor Charlemagne. Remember that name? Charlemagne. And Charlemagne was the Roman Emperor over Europe, basically, over what is today France and England and Spain. But anyway, Charlemagne was the emperor in the 800s, 800s AD, early 800s. And the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope, issued an edict that outlawed or banned cremation. And Charlemagne was a good Catholic, and so he followed the Pope's ruling. Now, that was in 800 A.D. And so since 800 A.D., the Catholic Church, what is called in history the Christian Church, throughout the world, followed Charlemagne's lead and the Pope's lead. And as Catholicism was spread around the globe, they brought with it burying their dead as opposed to cremating their dead. And that started way back with Charlemagne. And, of course, it came to South America. It came to North America when the Catholics came here. Burial was practiced, not cremation. And it was not until the last just several decades here in America that cremation has made such a dramatic comeback. And I think that there are a couple of reasons for that. First, I think it is the lack of influence of the church. I really do. I think it's a lack of instruction. It's a lack of preachers preaching on it. People ask me all the time, "Pastor, what do you think about cremation?" And I say, "Well, I don't think you ought to do it. I don't think that God is going to, step out of heaven and zap you with a lightning bolt if you do. But I think the principle is, and he died and he was buried, and he died and he was buried. I think that's the principle. And every time burning a body is mentioned in the Bible, all three times, it has reference to the fact that the judgment hand of God was upon the person. And so I think, and I've made this statement from behind this pulpit, and I'm not trying to offend anybody, but it's the truth is the truth. We are a biblically ignorant people in America today. And our pulpits are biblically ignorant. I'll guarantee you there is not a handful of preachers across this country who have ever stood in their pulpit and preached to their congregation what I am sharing with you tonight. I'll guarantee you, not a handful. Nobody wants to deal with it. And most churches, it would tear them up. It really would. It'd tear up most churches. This ain't most churches. And you folks can handle the Bible. And so I don't worry about that. He said, "Well, Pastor, aren't you afraid you're going to make somebody mad?" I got over that years ago. I really did. I really did. I got over that a long time ago. But it's just not a subject that is mentioned today. But then secondly, cremation has made a comeback all over America today because funeral homes can have a body cremated and save a family thousands of dollars in funeral charges. It is just a whole lot cheaper to cremate than to bury. You don't have to buy a funeral plot or grave plots. You don't have to rent you don't have to get a casket. Or if you do get one for a viewing, it's just one night. It's just one afternoon. It's short and sweet. It's cheap. You can rent the casket. Rent a casket. They do it all the time. And then as soon as the service is over, everybody goes home and they take the body out, cremate the body, and then put another one in and haul it in and have another viewing in the same casket. It's just cheaper. You don't have to buy a vault. You don't have to embalm the body. You don't have to, I mean, there's just a lot of things you don't have to do. You don't have to pay the state to open a grave. You don't have to pay to close a grave. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just cheaper. And so a funeral today, I mean, good grief. You all know what funerals cost. And yes, sir, they don't. They are very, very, very expensive. And so if a funeral director tells you, oh, well, this funeral is going to cost you $10,000 or $12,000, $15,000. He sees you wince, and he says, well, do you have life insurance, and et cetera, et cetera. And you go through this whole big rigmarole about all the insurance and how long it's going to take and all this stuff. And then you got to fight the insurance companies to get the money. I mean, it's just unreal. And then the funeral home director can say, well, you know, after he asked you 1,000 questions, he can look at you and say, well, you know, we can do this for $1,500, $2,000. And a lot of people say, I'm good. Let's do that. You see, here's the problem, folks. We're a biblically ignorant society today. It needs to be said. We are a society without conscience today. But we are. We are a society without conscience. And a society without a conscience has no problem with cremation. You know why? Because they have no problem with abortion. Do you know why? Because they have no problem with euthanasia. And euthanasia is not the subject of teenagers in China. All right? Euthanasia is where you mercy kill, where you kill the elderly so they don't have to suffer, so they don't have to create an expense. And a society without a conscience has no problem with that stuff. And folks, the Bible talks about the dignity of man and the dignity of a human body. And we need to stop and think about this. But one of the things, now listen to me, listen. One of the things that secular humanism does, you might want to write this down. One of the things that progressive liberalism does is it creates a throwaway society. It creates a throwaway society. They do not believe that there is a God that created us and that all of us are just the product of evolution. Millions and millions of years ago, there was this big bang and the universe was created, and eventually everything evolved from the bang so that man is just one more animal on the chart. Just another animal. And we are viewed by them as a throwaway society. And thus we have lost the dignity that we used to have for life. All right, let me ask you a question. Do you remember when you were a kid? And do you remember, yeah, go back, all right, come on. Yeah, clear the dust out, go back. Do you remember when you were a kid? And do you remember when, as a kid, you were in your mom and dad's car going down the road and all of a sudden a funeral procession come down this way? You remember what you did? You were going the other way. Remember that? But what did you do? You pulled off the road and stopped, didn't you? Remember that? Where'd that go? Where did that go? You see, we've lost the dignity of life. We have lost that. We are a throwaway society. You know what? We've got to, if we have a big funeral, which when one of our church members dies, we normally do have a big funeral. And that's one of the first questions that Kyle will ask me, or Dale will ask me, is, was this guy faithful to your church? Was this woman faithful to your church? Are we going to have a big funeral? Is this going to be an open door funeral? Yeah, it's going to be an open door. It's going to be at the church. Oh, why? Well, we better get the police out there. Yeah, you better. Because we're going to have a lot of people going down to the cemetery. And so here's the state police and the county sheriffs, and they're out here helping us. You know why? Because if half of us get through the light out here at 97 and 140, if half of us get through the light, even though everybody there saw the hearse, everybody there saw this long procession of cars with the lights on, they saw it all. As soon as their light turns green, beep, 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 going around everybody and cutting them off and cussing and hanging their middle finger out the door, yes, I've seen it. Why? I'll tell you why, folks. Because we have lost our general respect for the human body that was created in the image of God. And that's one reason why cremation has become so popular in our ungodly society. And then there's another reason. And that is just open rebellion against God. You know, let me tell you what a man, this happened. It's only happened to me once. But this happened to me when years ago when I was pastoring down in Nitro, West Virginia. So this was 28, 29, 30 years ago. And there was a fella, his family came to our church, and he got cancer, young man in his 40s. And he got cancer, terminal. And I went over to see him, tried to witness to him, and he didn't want anything to do with it. I tried to lead him to the Lord. He wanted nothing to do with it. I said, man, do you realize you're sick? You're going to die? He said, I'll take my chances. I said, well, you're not going to win. And he said, well, I don't believe in any of this. And so one day he was real bad. And matter of fact, he died just a few days later. And I went up to the hospital to try one more time. His wife called, said, he's sick. I don't know if he's going to get through this one. Can you come and try it again? And when I came in, he got mad. Susie saw me. He got mad. And he said, well, it's a good thing you're here. She said, come here. And I walked over to the side of the bed. And he looked at his wife and said, I want the both of you to hear this. He said, when I die, he said, I want you to cremate my body, and then I want you to promise me, looked at his wife, I want you to promise me that you will take my ashes and pour them into the Kanawha River. And then he looked at me, and here's what he said. He looked at me, and he said, let God find me then. Let God find me then. And I just looked at him, and I said, that's no problem for God. Oh, he'll find you. No, he won't. I said, yes, he will. No, he won't. He said, the Kanawha goes into the Ohio and the Ohio into the Mississippi and the Mississippi into the Gulf of Mexico. He's never going to find me. I guarantee told you God finds him. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, let me give you some things to think about. Then we'll close. All right, listen to me. Listen to me, folks. This is 40 years of being a pastor, okay? This is heart to heart, 40 years of being in the ministry. Would you listen to me for a minute? Please. I think that every family needs a time to grieve the loss of a loved one. All right? Every family needs that. Death was not in God's original plan. And therefore, death came as a result of sin, and it's an intruder. And I don't care who you are, when it comes to you and your family, it hurts. It hurts. And for sure, it has reached its ugly hand out, and it has touched every family in this room. This earth that we live on is literally filled with dead men's bones. We are born and we die. That's just the way it is. All because of sin. And let me tell you something, folks. A viewing is needed for you to grieve the loss that you are suffering. There is just something about your family and your friends and your church family coming to hug you and to tell you that they're praying for you and to help the hurt not hurt quite as bad. We need the preacher to say some comforting words and to give the gospel and to give the family an opportunity to trust Christ as their Savior. What better time than when folks are thinking about their own mortality to share the gospel? You just can't beat it. Also, a Christian burial gives the family a sense of comfort and assurance. Have you ever noticed how beautifully decorated the funeral homes are? Have you ever noticed how serious the undertakers are? They don't joke and goof off. They don't, it's not ha ha hee hee. It is somber. It is sad. It is low key. You almost have to force yourself to hear what they're saying. They talk so soft and they talk so low. And there's a reason for that. When you go to the funeral home, do you ever notice how beautifully decorated those funeral homes are? I mean, they're full of antiques and full of beautiful tables and the flowers are there. And there's a reason for that. The reason is they're trying to mask the ugliest thing that we have to deal with in life, and that's death. Anything they can do to mask death and to soothe the awful effects that death brings, that is the purpose for the funeral home. The deceased is laid out in nice clothes. Flowers are carefully placed in strategic places. Soft, beautiful music is playing in the background. I mean, the funeral home is doing everything it can to make the ugliness and the sadness of death not hurt as much as it does. Preparing a body and placing it in a grave gives healing for the family, folks. It gives healing for the family. When a loved one is buried, there is a place where the family can visit a gravesite. Now, not every family needs that. Not every family needs that. I probably have only been to my mother's graveside 2 times that I can remember. Serious. You say, why? Well, she's not there. That's the main reason. She's not there. Now, my brother goes all the time. My sister goes all the time. My dad goes all the time. But I just don't need that. Why? Because I don't see my mom as out on Tyler Mountain Memorial Gardens. I see my mom walking on streets of gold. I just don't need to go out there to feel that I am thinking or missing my mother. I just don't need to do it. I can do it right here. I can do it right here. See what I'm saying? But not everybody needs that. But a lot of folks do. And so a grave gives the family comfort. The living relatives know. Oh, listen, this is so important. The living relatives know that their loved one was given a dignified and proper burial where their body can rest in peace, awaiting the sound of the trumpet and the Lord to come back and call them out of the grave. You say, well, Pastor, we already cremated our loved one. Are we under the judgment of God? No, 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 I'm not saying that at all. I'm just trying to give you some understanding here. What you've done in the past, you've done. It cannot be undone. You say, well, now I feel bad. Don't feel bad. Chalk it up to, I didn't know. All right? Chalk it up to, I didn't know. You say, well, I can't afford a funeral. Who can? Who can? But let me remind you, it's still in the Bible, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. You say, well, Pastor, we scattered my loved one's ashes. Is God going to be able to find them? Of course he is. He saw where every particle landed. Mark it down. He's God. And when that trumpet sounds, it'll come together and go to be with the Lord. Now, folks, a grave it offers a place for the family to grieve. Certain times of year, you can bring flowers. It keeps a connection open. You realize your loved one is not there, but it gives a place of reference for the family to properly grieve and remember their loved ones. Now, look at me and I'm done. I cannot take you to a chapter and a verse in the Bible and say that the Word of God is against cremation and you should not cremate ever. I cannot take you to a verse like that. Just can't do it. You say, why? Because it's not in the Bible. But again, this is a guy with 40 years experience. I've done funerals for families who, once the service was done, they had their loved one cremated. I don't have a problem doing the service. If you ask me before the service, I'm going to tell you, well, I prefer burial. I don't want to be cremated. I prefer burial. I prefer being placed in the ground. And he died and he was buried. That's my preference. That's my preference. All right. I cannot take you to a Bible and a verse and say, this proves that you should not cremate. And I don't judge. If somebody says, well, we're cremating so-and-so, will you do the funeral? Yes, I will. I will do it. And I'm not going to judge you for it. I was in a home one time out in Illinois, and there was a lovely urn on the table. And I said, wow, what a beautiful vase. And the guy said, that's grandma. I didn't know I had grandma in my hands. And then he looked over at me and he said, it was thousands of dollars cheaper to cremate. That's what he said, than to have her buried. And folks, it is. And there is no doubt that for a lot of people, cost is a major reason why they're choosing to go the cremation route. So really, the only reason I say, listen to me now, the only reason that I say that I prefer burial over cremation is because in the Bible, the order is, and he died and he was buried. That's my only reason. So if you cremated your loved one, I am not condemning you. I'm just trying to get you to see there is a principle. There is a principle. And he died and he was buried. And while there may not be any verses stating in precept what to do about this matter, there is a principle that should guide us. First is, and he died and he was buried. And second is, 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. I say we ought to glorify God in all things, and even in death. You say, but when someone is dead, what do they care what happens to their bodies? Well, they don't. They don't. But don't forget, they were created in the image of God. They were created in the image of God. And a society that does not honor its dead is a troubled society. I just think about it for a minute, folks. Just think about it. I'll close with this, I promise. I heard that. Listen. Just think about it, all right? Just use common sense. When we hear news reports about mass graves found down in Mexico. You know what I'm talking about? Where those drug lords just line people up, shoot them, and drop them over in a ditch. And then they bring a bulldozer in, shove the dirt over them. You know what I'm talking about? Does that not just absolutely make you cringe? You ever watch those things on the History Channel about World War II and Hitler and his murderous thugs and how they killed millions of Jews and how they show people and they make them get on their knees, tie their hands behind their backs, and then all the soldiers walk up behind them and shoot them in the back of the head and they fall down into a ditch and then they just cover them over. Doesn't your stomach just turn when you see that? Oh, it just makes you so angry. How could people be so brutal? How could they be so awful? It's appalling to us. We just cringe at the thought of the indignity perpetrated upon innocent people. The point is, folks, there is a certain dignity that should be given to those among us who die. The funeral homes recognize this, and that's why they conduct themselves as they do. That's why their comportment is like it is. You'll never see Kyle Pritz. You'll never see Fletcher's. You'll never see any of them joking and cutting up and carrying on. You'll never see that. Why? They understand the dignity of death. America needs to wake up and see it too. All right. I hope that helps you.